So where did you get all these skills from?
A good answer for that, Arne. No, I'm joking. So I think the short answer is it is actually from my parents a little bit. So my father is a programmer engineer, and my real father was a salesperson.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
Okay, James here, and in this podcast, I'm talking to Noah Kagan, who runs AppSumo. And he's an interesting guy because he's worked for Intel and Facebook and Microsoft. So tune in as I catch him having breakfast.
Oi!
It's morning there, hey?
I was like, my phone was like, oh, you have a, like, 9. I was like, shit, I'm still eating breakfast. How's everything?
Mate, things are going very well. We had a 50% increase just in the last 2 months from January to now. So it's been a good year.
50% increase in what?
Sales revenue.
Oh, for your business?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
What do you, it's like, I love it when it works out that way. What do you attribute it to?
I'm paying a lot more attention to the numbers. You know how you've got your number?
Yeah.
I'm putting a lot more attention on projections and digging into the data, because I've had a very low pressure system that's not forced. So when I start tuning things, I get very fast wins, and I have an amazing team.
Man, it's so fast. Once you start focusing, I'm actually giving a speech tonight about focus, and it's like, even our own team, we had some issues with it. Refocusing, and it was like, wow, we're getting the results we want. That's kind of cool. So that's great, man.
What do you think your focus topic's going to be focused around? Like, have you got you're going to tell a story?
Yeah. I'm going to tell a lot of different stories that have happened in terms of focusing. So like one of the bigger ones that's more recent for us is, I think everyone needs to start with an objective and a specific number around that objective. And, you know, ours was always email. And a lot of my speeches, you always hear me, oh, email this, email that. And for 5 months, though, the past 5 months, we focused on email and we kept hitting our goal. And the sad part, though, is the business stayed the same, right? Which is very depressing, because you're like, oh, I'm focused, I'm hitting my metrics, I'm what I want. And what we realized, though, is that metric and that objective actually wasn't the right thing to focus on, because it wasn't growing our business. So we actually refocused on a number of paying customers per day. And that's actually now we started, and then we just started really, really digging deep and focusing on that. And now we're seeing the results.
Right. So I was going to ask that, how you know if your number's the right number, because I think a lot of people focus on the wrong thing. Something else that I've noticed is a lot of the startup type companies focus on growth. But I'm wondering if growth for the sake of growth is a good idea, unless you're Amazon and you want to wait 7 years or so. And you've worked for that sort of company that was growth focused.
That's a really good question, man. So I think there's two types of people, but I'm just generally more traditional. And so I don't think it makes sense to focus on growth or any of that until you know that you have like a business. And so depending on what you are, I mean, you're much further ahead than a lot of people. So your focus is, how do I scale what I do, right? How do I grow it? The people in the beginning, I would say, like the Silicon Valley, I hate most of those people because they're like, oh, you know, we're going to monetize it later. I think that's okay for them. But for me, I'm like, is this a real business? Does it make money? So my first focus would be validate it makes money. And the number two would be, maybe then I would think about, what's my number towards growth? So validation would probably be how much money I could make.
I want to challenge you on something you mentioned. You said you're kind of traditional. And on the surface, though, you look like wacky, quirky. You've got funny pictures, crazy angles. I mean, you've got a fat suit logo. So how do you carry that? Is it structured or do you just wing it?
Well, it's winged. And it's interesting. Have you talked to people about AppSumo? There's a lot of people, they don't say, they're like, yeah, I use AppSumo. They say, I love AppSumo. And people are like, oh, I love your branding and your copywriting. And it's honestly just a byproduct of what we've been doing. It's not like an intentional, hey, we're trying to, you know, have a brand. We haven't really thought about that. It's just kind of, we act like ourselves and we treat our customers right. And then it works out where people think of us as a like pretty cool company.
So you must have a pretty loose structure for the team members able to take risks and extend themselves beyond a normal bureaucratic style company.
Are you recording this? This is good stuff.
Yeah, I started recording and I just thought we'll just roll with it. Since you're eating breakfast, oh, yeah. It's pretty formal.
Yeah, I'm eating my breakfast right now as we talk. It's interesting. So there's literally David Skoke from 4entrepreneurs.com. I love him. And I'm kind of, you know, more he said, but I basically think there's three stages of a business. Now, this is answering your question about bureaucracy in the company. And in the beginning of your business, you're just trying to validate it. You're very hands-on. You're very like day-to-day. You're very like very micro. And then stage two is, all right, now how do I market this thing that I validated? I proved that some people want it. Now, how do I get the word out? And then stage three, you're like, all right, I know how to get the word out. Now I'm going to go do it. And you take it to the moon as fast as you can. And I think I've evolved in stage one where I did everything. Like I literally did programming, sales, support, blah, 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 janitor, poop cleaning, whatever. Stage two was then, all right, now I've started hiring people. And the people weren't the best people, but it was starting to get the idea of like, all right, now I'm kind of moving away from the business and I'm going to start letting them make their own decisions. Because before in my other businesses, before AppSumo, I was much more of a tyrant. I was like, I'm going to do it my way because I know my way is the right way and just do exactly what I want. And in stage three now, where I think we're at the beginning of is we fired all the people in stage one and two. Stage three is you hire people that are not employees. They're actually teammates. And they, you know, they make the bit, you know, one of the things I like looking at is every week I come back, like, let's say I go away for a week. I go to, you know, are you New Zealand or Australia?
Australia.
I go to Australia and we party for a week. We go scuba diving, fun stuff. And I come back and then I look at the business and I say, is the business the same as when I left it or is it better? And so that's a combination of it. And that's what I'm trying to do now, where hire the right people, empower them to make their own decisions. And really, as long as they know that the company goal, what that is at a high level, let them make their own stuff. I think someone said this to me when I was working at Microsoft. Here's the football field. Here's you with football. Here's the end zone. I've kind of given you the outline. I don't care how you score. I don't care if it's a touchdown, a football, a pass, whatever. You score. You figure it out. And you hire people that are good. They can figure it out. And so, yeah, in terms of, I'm actually trying to get better at even getting further away from the business. Mostly to kind of keep thinking like, what's the highest level stuff we can be doing? And definitely less micromanaging or micro checking in on people.
Do you go into the building every day?
I do, unfortunately.
But don't you control that?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's up to you, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think what's interesting is the evolution of that, where I've always run businesses remotely and I've hired people remotely, so forth. And finally, with AppSumo, we did some team outings. We did two of them in Austin, where I said, everyone come fly in. We'll pay for it. We got a big house. We drank. We went on a boat. One of the guys wore Speedos. It was awkward. And but I noticed when we all got together, the output was higher and the morale was better. And so I'm like, you know, I want to take this seriously. I want to see how far we can take AppSumo. And said, all right, by October, we're all going to be in the same location. And so we worked remote and then we went to the same location and we're in the same location. I said, all right, I just want everyone to come Mondays and Thursdays. You know, sometimes you want, like, I don't want to be in an office, right? And sometimes it's nice outside. I want to work at a cafe or I don't want to work at all. And I told the team, come Mondays and Thursdays. And look, I'm very meritocracy and very results driven. You get your stuff accomplished and maybe even try to do more than that. I don't care what you do. But as it turns out, I think it's the best people want to be around the others. And I actually want that as well. Like, I enjoy being around the team. I enjoy working on our mission. I enjoy like being in the office. So I'm actually in the office 5 days a week. Some days, like Monday, I was getting a little restless. I was like, holy fuck, how do people sit at computers for this long? But for the most part, it's fun to be like, it's like, think about your greatest life calling and you can be in a room with other people that are excited to work on too. And they're really happy there. It's just a great feeling to do all day. So yeah, I go 5 days a week, but I only ask twice a week.
I mean, it's funny hearing that because I imagine that coming from your corporate background and you've worked at places like Facebook, that would have been the default setting. I was surprised to hear that you were virtual because I run a virtual team and the same as you. When I go and meet them and hang out for a week, it is incredible what you can do face-to-face, but it's not logistically ideal for us. So that's really interesting.
Well, take some more seriously, man. So like, I worked at Intel, and I hope I didn't cut you off. I'll ride shotgun. You can drive. The do you use that word in Australia?
Yeah, well, we get a lot of American TV, so it's fine. We know what you're talking about.
Dude, I watched High School High. You know the show from Australia? Yeah, that guy's awesome. Anyway, so the big thing... fuck, lost my train of thought.
You're talking about getting together with the team, taking it seriously, and what you learned at Intel.
Oh, man, fuck. Intel was like going to hell. It was like, think about every day, you're just like... You know, I think there's a really easy test to see if you like your job. How do you feel driving to work in the morning? Either you can do that one, or you can do Sunday. On Sunday, how do you feel? And most times, it's like not most times. Every Sunday when I worked at Intel, I was like, fuck, it's Monday tomorrow. And on AppSumo, I'm like, hey, cool, Monday. I'll see everybody. Like, I'm excited to be there. There's a round thing that we found out with putting everyone in the same room and in the same area. It's just, we take it more seriously. And it's just, it is more of a real thing. And it's like, we're playing for real. Like, yeah, I think we could do well and you could be a remote business, but I would challenge anyone who wants to create something significant, like prove one company that has done it remotely. And even 37 Signals, they have 35 people in a room in Chicago. So I don't buy that. But is there any one company that's big from being remote? I don't think so. Maybe I'll hopefully be proven wrong.
Well, it depends what you call big.
That's a fair point. Or maybe like any company making over $25 million a year.
Yep, well, there you go. That's a good metric. So listeners could pop a note if they can think of one. That's good. I'm certainly not at that level yet. I'm aiming for half that as my next objective. How big is AppSumo, just out of interest? Is that something that's public knowledge?
We don't really talk about the revenue. And I've thought about this a lot. I think one of the reasons I don't, because I don't want people thinking that's only what we're about, which is just the money stuff. It's like, oh, what's your money number? It's kind of a penis-sized question, but I think for me, it's more of like how many people, and it's cheesy, but like how many people are on our mailing list? How many people have we affected? And I'll tell you now, just, you know, if you're curious, this is not, I guess it's not really public, but I'll share it. Like our metric and what I care about, I don't care about anything else besides how many people a day are paying us. I'm not going to share that number, but that's actually just a metric that we have found affected a lot of other pieces of the business.
That would be your cohort metric, right? From all of your lean startup stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's just easy. Like the one thing I talked about, I think, in when I met you and in general, is just so much easier to focus on one thing to do it really, really well. Because I think you can tell the problems when people have multiple things they're trying to accomplish, and then they get them done really shitty. One of my favorite stories, James, and I'd love to share this. My friend with this a few weeks ago. So the CEO, and I hate stories about Apple, but I'll do it. An exception. And so the CEO, Tim Cook now, Apple, was on a stage with the investor meeting. I don't know if you've heard this, but he's on stage and he's got a table in front of him. It's a table maybe about 4 to 5 feet wide. And at the table, he has the MacBook Air, the Mac Mini, the desktop, and iPad, and I think maybe one more. He said, "We are the world's most successful company by having all the products you see on this table." And I think that just fucking blew my mind when my friend told me that. I said this quote like, I don't know, maybe 10 times now. And I think the real takeaway for anybody listening or just for myself is you don't have to do a lot of things, right? But just do a few things really well. And that's what they've done, right? And they've integrated them together and a few other things and then so forth. But if they can be the world's most successful company with just five or, you know, less than 10 products, think about your own business.
Well, that's kind of a Warren Buffett philosophy too, isn't it?
What does he say?
Well, he says he's basically like a buy and hold. He's got a very minimal amount of stock. He doesn't like diversification so much because I think you can spread your strengths too far and you actually average out any wins. So that's one thing I've noticed. I actually made a few little notes about what I think you do well. And from the amount of people that I come into contact with, you're quite rare in this. You're actually like quite the generalist, because I've heard you talk about research, I've heard you talk about sales copy, I've heard you talk about design, I know you're strategic, you definitely do testing, you're very good at communicating and networking, you definitely do outsourcing and team, plus you have the data management side of things, the less is more, and your analytics. So where did you get all these skills from?
A good answer for that. No, I'm joking. So I think the short answer is it is actually from my parents a little bit. So my father is a programmer engineer, and my real father was a salesperson. He was an entrepreneur, ran his own copier business. And so I kind of came out the bisexual, byproduct of those two people. My career has always been like, I've always been interested in wanting to make a business. I think a lot of people always say that, and that's how I felt too. And then I got excited about the internet. I just fucking was like, oh my God, I don't have to have inventory, and I don't have to deal with people in real life. And then the different attributes have just come out through experience. I think what I love about sharing my stuff is I'm hopefully saving people time and money so they can skip ahead and get to the stuff that actually matters. And so like I did sales at OfficeMax for 2 years. I did sales at Macy's. I listened to a lot of like Zig Ziglar. I read a lot of books like Jeffrey Gittimer, an amazing author about sales. Chet Holmes, Ultimate Salesman. And I think a lot of it was just like filling in where I needed to fill in. I do think like if I were to say I'm really good at something, it's probably just getting done and maybe marketing. But over time, it's like I learned programming because I was at Facebook. Well, I took 2 years of programming at Berkeley, but I'm at Facebook and I kept asking the developers. I was like, hey, can you guys get this done? Can you get this done? And they're like, no. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go learn how to program and start doing it myself. And that's programming. And you kind of just fill in the gaps where needed. And I think, you know, for me, that is kind of what ended up. And a lot of it also is through failure and just experimentation. So with analytics, my last, you know, you always hear fucking, oh, lean startup analytics, you got to track this shit. You got to, you know, my previous business, we tracked everything. And you know what we did with all that? Nothing. It was just really pretty. It was like, oh, look at this data. That's so cool. I couldn't do shit with it. And, you know, fortunately, my partner Chad is amazing. And, you know, what we've done with AppSumo is that, and so that was a learning experience. And so at AppSumo, we only track things that are actionable. If it is not actionable, it is not tracked. And even though it's cool, it's like people ask, no, what's your retention number? What's this number? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't care because I can't do shit with it. Or it doesn't affect the core focus right now. And so a lot of it is just kind of seeing where, you know, what you've been, right? Like I mentioned the overall, like, I kind of look at myself now more as a composer, where I get to go find the best musicians to make this really great song. And I like the orchestration of it. And so I've just kind of filled in the gaps where what I don't know. And also realizing what I don't want to know. Like I'm okay at programming, but I'm at a point where I don't want to know. And oh, it's fucking annoying, man. You know, there's all these business people out there. I'm going to learn to code so I can, I'm like, is that really good use of your time? Like, are you really going to like focus and dedicate yourself to being really great at that? Like the Apple story, just pick one. So I would say mine would probably be marketing and sales. But I've just kind of like complemented that so I understand the rest of the parts of the business.
Yeah, I recognize so many of those traits because I think we have a lot of parallels.
Yeah, don't you see, like you see through your own business, right? Do you start? I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, I have almost a mirror image. It's in the family. I do think probably a lot of the things that we do later on in life were instilled when we were kids.
What did your parents do?
Well, my mum used to speak at schools for Red Cross, and my dad was a chemical engineer, so he was like the scientific guy who has a huge general knowledge, and my mum was the communicator and very empathetic, you know, helping people all the time, solving problems.
That's really cool.
Yes. She's like the most amazing marketer you could ever meet. Like she will go to a bunch of strangers and within minutes she'll have rapport with all of them.
That is great.
So I'm just curious, I want to get your angle on risk reversal because it's a big part of AppSumo is that, you know, you've got this very generous refund policy. Do you ever get bothered by people putting in, you know, frivolous refund requests? Does it ever get under your skin, or you just know that that's just part of the business?
You're hitting my soft spot, James. You're hitting me where it hurts.
Because I know, you know, I have a certain stance on refunds. And so I look at that and I think, I just wonder about that. I wonder how, you know, do you just ignore it? Do you get taken advantage of, or is it, it really does increase sales so much more that it's worth doing?
So there's a book, Predictably Irrational, where Dan Ariely says it. And I think it's really fascinating. I think it was that book. When you actually don't have a refund policy, the purchases that people make, they enjoy more. And it's counterintuitive, but the idea there is that when you have to make a decision you know is final, you're going to accept that this is the best decision for you. when you have that open-ended, like, return it whenever, you're like Costco in America, you're like, whatever the fuck, I'll return it whenever, or like REI, you know, camping store, yeah, whatever the fuck, I'll return it whenever. But on the other hand, that open return policy theoretically should increase your conversion rate so that more people buy. And part of the problem now, though, is that those refund policies, everyone does a fucking great refund policy. Refunds forever, refunds until the stork comes or until the reawakening of some famous person. I was going to say something religious, but I don't want to offend people. Anyway, point being is that, like, there's you can do it your way, right? And so the way it did bother me, and what happened was one guy, I got an email Friday night. I'm out drinking with some friends. It's like 8 p.m. I got an email. It's like, hey, I'm returning $2,000 worth of stuff because I just want to get, like, I want to make my money back. I want to, like, make his money back almost. And my immediate reaction was like, what a bitch, right? And, you know, Derek Sivers has a great, I keep referring to other people, but Derek Sivers had a great post one time where it was like, it's called Signs. And in his post, like, they put up signs in restaurants and stores because one person messes it up, right? But it really isn't, you shouldn't ruin the 99% just because the 1% sucked. So what I did was, one of that person, of course, we stayed by our policy, but I actually went and ran analysis. I just kind of pulled the top 100 returners on AppSumo, and I looked at what was the outcome of that. Was it negative in terms of the overall profit, or is it positive? And it was positive. Right. And these are the top 100 returners, right? Like thousands of dollars. And, you know, it kind of hurts me because I'm like, I don't know if they realize, like, we have to pay salaries and for the office and then for our servers, and we have to pay our partners. And so in that money, and on, if it's an honest return, I gladly return it. Like, I actually want people returning things, and I love returns. I love when they return if they didn't get value out of it. That's fine. But I think there are others out there who take advantage. Like, they use all the products, they totally take advantage of it, and then they return it. You know, they have to live with that. And at the end of the day, the net of it was still positive for us. But I actually think returns for businesses are good. It's a good chance to make a great experience and a lifetime customer, right? Because if you go and return something and the company actually, like, stands by it and, like, treat you well, and they're like, oh, cool, yeah, just come back again if you want to buy from us. And that's how I feel about REI and Costco. And that's why I think I'm okay with the return policy where we are today.
That's a great answer. Okay, I want to ask you one more slightly off the wall question.
Oh, wild, man.
Okay. You must get a lot of people saying, oh, Noah's doing well. He's got AppSumo. I'm just going to come up with like app clone Suno. How do you feel about that? And what sort of challenges have you had as a company protecting your space?
So the two pieces of that are, it's always interesting about perception versus reality, because I don't really feel successful. Like, after you make a certain amount of money, like, supposedly, I think in America, if you make $60,000 to $75,000 as a salary, the amount of money above that isn't really going to change how much you work or how you feel. Once you get past $500,000 or something like that. So I'm always fascinated. People are like, you're successful. I'm like, I guess. I don't know. I think we each have our own internal barometer of what that looks like. So there's been a fair amount of competitors. And there's also, you have to consider I actually don't see many real competitors. And the reason that is that it's very easy to do something once, but I think the two pieces that are missing are, one, the why, right? Like, why do you do it? And my why is very strong. Like, my calling in life is to help people start their businesses, improve their careers. Like, I didn't notice until, like, this year that I always try to get people that I hardly know into the jobs that they really want to be doing, even if they work for someone else, but that's what they really want. I love that. And that makes my drive towards AppSumo very strong, where someone else, well, you know, at the first speed bump, we'll quit and push. The second thing is, like, I mean, you know, frankly, we kind of take it more seriously. There's been a lot of competitors, and some are still around, and some are doing okay, some are failing. We play for keeps. And I think a lot of the other people are like, oh, this is a way to make money, and let me try it out, how it goes, and it doesn't work, or it does work a little bit, and they're not just to stick with it and keep going. And then third, to me, we're not a Daily Deals. We're not Groupon or Block. We're actually going to be a store for professionals, right? And so we're trying to be this destination that's not just like a thing, but a massive thing for the world. And I think people have different perception of what they're doing. And most of our competitors, I would say, are just kind of like, oh, we're Daily Deals for, like, ever, right? And it's not, the Daily Deal stuff is just a medium. That's just a medium of sale, right? That's just how you sell whatever your business really is. And I think they kind of miss that, which affects the rest of their business. So Yeah, I mean, I actually wish we had more competition. I compete with people walking on the street. They don't even know they're losing to me, and I just walk past them. yeah, it's really awkward. I can't fucking help myself. I really can't. Even winning. When I
winning.
It's so. No, seriously, I like even on the stairs or if I'm jogging, I'm like, I pick one person and I'm like, I am going to kill you. And so I would actually prefer if there's more people like playing really hard against us. And, you know, and I think it'll push us to be a lot better because I feel like because we don't have as much like intense direct around it right now. Like when I was at Facebook, I swear to God, we talked about MySpace a lot. We're like, look at those assholes in Los Angeles. They're fucking killing us. We got to push harder. And I know MySpace, Facebook probably wouldn't have been as big, right?
Yeah, well, you know, when I was working with Mercedes-Benz, every second word was BMW in the corporate meetings. They were just obsessed with each other.
You're exactly right. That's exactly the point.
And I was watching an Ayrton Senna video, and he was obsessed with beating Alain Prost. That was it. That was his sole mission, was just to beat number one.
Yeah. I mean, and I've learned about myself, and I don't know about other the listeners and yourself too, James, is that I just work really well with goals, right? So it's a lot easier if you're like, we're going to be number one. And right, and then you have someone, you think, being number one is, you can look at it both ways, but I almost think it's the worst position to be in because all you can do is go down, right? When you're number two, you have nothing to lose. You can be as crazy as you want. And you exactly know what number one is doing and what has worked and what's not. When you're number one, you it's very, like even Facebook, I don't think people realize it. It's very easy to get complacent. It's very easy to be like, hey, we're $1 billion. We have a billion people. We have all the shit. Like, let's just take it easy. And, you know, I think the companies that stay on top are the ones that keep evolving and so forth. And so I think being number one is almost harder.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one last question.
Man, this is good questions, dude. Be prepared. I liked it.
Okay. Well, you should like this one, right? If you're in a burrito bar, do you get the same burrito because you know it's awesome, or do you try a different one at the risk that it mightn't be as good, but you get to try, you know, you may find a better one?
So there's a book that I would encourage all your readers to stop and go buy right now, listeners, not readers. It's called Paradox of Choice. And Paradox of Choice is really fascinating because the author says, whenever you look for more options, your happiness generally goes down. And I fully agree with that. And so what the author does is that when he goes to a restaurant, he starts at the top of the menu for entrees, goes down, and the first one he likes, and then he stops. He doesn't look at other options. He just picks it and goes on. And then every time he goes to that restaurant, he just gets the same dish. Because then he doesn't have, oh, did I get something better? So and this might be weird, I get the same thing every time at the same places I go. If I go to a new city, you know, I'm open to trying new things, but what I've found out is that I know it's good. I enjoy it. It's not that it could be better. It could be worse. It's kind of like getting married. Like there probably is a hotter woman out there, but I like my wife. I'm not married. I'm single. But I think that's part.
That is random. Your fake wife. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, but you get the point. It's like it's marriage. It's kind of like so. It's not like you can never try. Well, if you're married, you shouldn't be trying new burritos unless you're open. But yeah, when I go to certain restaurants, it reduces the thinking that I have to put into it so I can put my mind on other things. So if I go to Taco Deli, I always get cowboy tacos and then maybe I'll try one new one, but I always kind of have the same dish. Or, you know, and I just very clearly, I did a raw food diet where I did like vegetables, fruit, and water for 3 weeks. And it's a longer story, but the short story of it is one of the greatest things I enjoyed about it was I didn't have to think about food because every day I almost had the same thing. And I don't know, it's kind of freeing when you don't have to have that pressure and you could put your mind on some activity. So that if I go to a burrito bar, if it's new, I'm on a health kick lately, so I'll get beans, guac, and chicken. That's pretty much what I would just get now. And I actually don't get the tortillas as much as I used to.
Nice. Oh, well, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, man.
Well, thanks for sharing breakfast with us today. And also, I want to let you know that I ended up making a few purchases after you gave me that RSS feed. So that's been working out pretty well for both of us.
See, that's actually a problem. I think that's what separates you versus others, James, is that you came and you said, hey, you know, I don't subscribe and fuck AppSumo and all that. You didn't say fuck. But you said those things. And you said, hey, if I have an RSS feed, I, you know, do something about it. And I think people miss that every single customer is valuable. And well, not all of them. You could fire some of them. Like we did the guy who returned 2,000. But I don't think people are hungry enough these days. Right. And what I mean by that is that, like, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of people and blah, blah, blah. But I still give a shit about you. Right. And to me, it's like, it's each individual person that makes a difference. And so I feel like everybody who's running their own business needs to say, let me make one of my customers happy today. Or if you even meet one of them, like, I'm going to make sure that I treat you well. And I feel like so many people let that slide.
Well, I think that was your first question. Why did I unsubscribe? Because I commented that I really liked the unsubscribe picture on your thing. So yeah. It was like my welcoming line. G'day.
Oh, God.
But, you know, you asked why and then you solved it and it's definitely made you some money. Hopefully more people get that RSS feed and it becomes worthwhile for you to do. But, you know, I certainly talk about it on every occasion and I have two podcasts and, you know, a couple of thousand members in my community who are all going to find out about AppSumo. So it's working well.
What's your biggest challenge? Is there anything that the listeners or I can help you with? Because I appreciate that. Awesome.
I think like every business, I'm the biggest constraint in my business and we've got a big team now and we're growing rapidly. I'm pretty good at solving my own problems. You know, I've got a mirror and I think that's actually helped me more than anything else, asking the big questions of myself. But just by talking to me today, you've really helped me because I'm able to do what I do, which is help all of my listeners get some value. We don't charge for the podcast, of course, but if they can implement ideas, then that actually helps them become my customer. So I guess it's a good equation.
Yeah, man. No, it is funny. We are the ones holding a stack. Yesterday I signed up for an executive coach. I never done it before. I remember at Facebook, Mark had a coach and I always thought he was kind of a douche. I was like, why do you need a coach? Like we're young and we're smart and we can do everything. But I think there's a lot to be said when you go work out and you have a trainer or when you go play basketball and you have a coach. So I'm open to trying something new. So maybe we'll do another podcast later. I can tell you how it goes.
I'd love to do another podcast. So I'm going to let you go because you've probably got stuff to do, some fat suits to strap on and some deals to help entrepreneurs help with. But it's awesome to catch up again. Thanks, Noah.
All right, brother. Be well, James.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.